Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we started a conversation with John Morehouse, and it involved Islam and evangelical Christianity. Within the American context, Islam continues to garner a lion's share of the public's attention. Given this religious backdrop, American evangelicals have tended to respond to Islam in a myriad of ways. On the one hand, some evangelicals have responded through expressions of fear and condemnation, a response that views Islam as violent and a threat to Western values. Yet another reaction is confusion and paralysis. This is more difficult to categorize, but its manifestations are easily recognizable. Subsequently, many evangelicals have opted for a posture of silence. As such, the most urgent and pressing questions among evangelicals remain dormant, relegated to conversations over dinner with friends or following a board meeting with particular constituencies. So Fuller Theological Seminary has been actively engaged in Christian-Muslim dialogue for years, seeking to demonstrate openness, understanding, and above all, love. Since 2010, the Evangelical Interfaith Dialogue Journal has played a key role in connecting Fuller Seminary to interfaith work of evangelicals around the world. With funding from the Henry Luce Foundation, Fuller Seminary co-created with Calvin Theological Seminary and the Lausanne Movement an event that was recently held here in Grand Rapids. A consultation of evangelical leaders was held at Calvin. This intra-evangelical conversation asked how respective hopes, fears, and questions of Christians can be addressed as they strive to move beyond paralysis and demonization in engagement with Muslims. Emphasis was placed on identifying actionable theological resources to root interfaith engagement deeply within approaches to Christian discipleship across denominational lines. The resources from the consultation at Calvin will be published in a special edition of the Evangelical Interfaith Dialogue Journal, which will focus on Islamophobia in America and will include contributing authors from Christian and Muslim communities. As I mentioned, last week we spoke with John Moorhead, who is the co-editor and contributing author for Encountering New Religious Movements, A Holistic Evangelical Approach. This week, we speak with his colleague, Dr. Bob Roberts, Jr. He's the founding and senior pastor of Northwood Church in Fort Worth, Texas. Northwood has started over 200 churches in the U.S. and a center for training new pastors. He is a leading practitioner and writer on global transformation on individuals and religious communities, NGOs, cities, and global engagement. Having worked extensively with the UN and various state departments globally, he also is deeply involved in multi-faith efforts and religious freedom globally. He is a nationally and internationally recognized speaker and author of books including Transformation, Glocalization, Real-Time Connections, and Bold as Love. We welcome to Common Threads, Dr. Bob Roberts, Jr. Hello, Bob.
How are you doing? I'm glad to be with you.
I'm very pleased, especially with the last-minute arrangement from your very busy schedule. My first question, of course, when I was going over your bio here, glocalization. I thought that was a misprint. Then I kind of rolled it around in my head, and I thought, I'll bet you that makes sense.
tell us
how glocalization makes sense.
It makes sense because the world is now connected. It's the local and the global, and it's the meshing of the two. And we live in a world now that's connected like never before. And that connectivity has created strength, but it's also created some destabilization as people sociologically are disconnected from a lot of their roots and their relationships and their traditions and their sources of income, and it's never going to go away. So we have to learn a new way to relate to one another and to relate to life if we're going to make it into the future.
Which makes sense that someone who holds the views you do would have been at the evangelical / Muslim consultation at Calvin Seminary recently. Tell me, how did you get invited? That is to say, because I know that John told me last week that this was by invitation only. Clearly, you have a background in this sort of work, specifically with Islam, with Muslims, that got you here to Grand Rapids. Tell me what that work has been.
Well, it started 20 years ago in Vietnam. Our church adopted the city of Hanoi, and it's too long to tell the story, but short version is, our church members begin to use their job to go back and forth working with the government and serving the people of Hanoi. Through doing that, I learned how to work with governments, political figures, various departments in the government, the domains of society. How do we help people connect and practically live out their faiths as Americans who would go and work there? So we've had thousands of people to go there, spent millions of dollars on projects. After 9/11, we were asked to do the exact same thing in Afghanistan, which I did not want to do, to be honest with you. But I did. And once again, it's a long story, so we don't have time to go into it. But through a fluke, I became friends with one of the tribal leaders, what we would call a warlord. And his son and I became extremely close. And he introduced me to some imams. And together, I began to connect American evangelical pastors with imams from Afghanistan, and we begin to build schools and clinics and a community college and a lot of other projects. And so as a result of that, I was asked to speak at the World Islamic Forum in Doha one year, and they wanted me to talk about how does an evangelical pastor be friends with communists and Muslims. And so I gave the talk. When it was over, I was asked to be in a think tank with world leaders, about 30, some of them good people, some of them bad people, but to talk about the world, where it was, and how we relate. And I became friends with one of the prominent princes in Saudi Arabia, and he said, Bob, it's great what you do with Muslims around the world, but what about your own home? And I said, well, Your Highness, I pastor a Baptist church in Dallas, Texas. That'd be like you trying to start a Baptist church in Mecca. That'd be a hard thing to do. And so he said, but you know, if it's that tense, that's all the more reason why you should do it. So 6 years ago, our church began to reach out to the Muslims in the DFW area. And at first, I was met with suspicion. Who is this evangelical pastor who wants to convert everyone? He's Baptist. The Baptists are always saying negative things on television about Muslims and so forth. So the first thing I had to do is to build my relationship with the imam. But then after that, we began to do a couple of things together, and we had an event where we expected about 400 Muslims, so I invited 400 Christians. The only thing was we had over 2,100 Muslims show up, and the desire for Muslims to connect with evangelicals was huge because of the grief, honestly, that evangelicals have caused to the Muslims in America. How could they build a bridge to that? And the rest is history.
That is an amazing story. And you said that soon after 9/11, you were asked to start this project in Afghanistan, correct?
That's right.
Wasn't it dangerous then? Why would they want civilians over there who weren't contractors?
It was dangerous, and it is dangerous. But I think two things were going on. Number one, we may have had our views about what needed to happen militarily, but the reality was the disconnect between Americans and Afghans, the religion, the culture, was so wide. How could we narrow those gaps? And so the idea was, if we could show that we want to work with Muslims, not merely try to convert Muslims, but to be in relationship with them, that could be a positive thing, and it was. What I didn't realize was how that was going to open up the whole world for me, and I definitely didn't realize how it would serve as the seed for what we do now with pastor imam retreats all over the U.S. And so what we learned from that, we've done five of them now, and they've gone over huge. We get pastors and imams from certain cities together for a three-day retreat. And generally on the first day, they're very nervous to be around one another, but by the third day, they're laughing. We have a whole set of things that they have to do, and it works. But I think it was the same thing we need in our country now. There was a gap that needed to be bridged. We have a huge gap in our country right now between Muslims and Christians, and it's up to the majority, those of us that are Christians and evangelicals, to reach out and bridge that gap. The minority can't do it. We have to do it.
This is off subject, but you mentioned this, and I have to ask the question. You refer to a tribal leader as a warlord. When I hear the word warlord, I think of somebody who isn't the nicest person in the world. I wouldn't want my daughter, I don't have one, but if I had a daughter, I wouldn't want her to marry a warlord. Are you saying that warlord isn't necessarily a pejorative term?
No, it's tribal leader, but most Americans wouldn't know what you meant if you said tribal leader. But the warlord, here's the reality. If you've ever watched any Western movies with the big cattle ranchers that come in and shoot up the other little ranchers, there's a lot of similarity, a tremendous amount of similarity. That's just the world that they live in. Are there some of them that are incredibly evil? Yes, no question about it. But it has more to do with a culture that has existed for thousands of years more than it does a descriptive term of someone that's evil.
So you are in an interesting environment, being in Texas and being a Baptist, and being a pastor of a Baptist church, and you are able to see a broader world than perhaps many of us. What do you say? Because I have a feeling you've said it a lot to a lot of different individuals. What do you say to the person who comes up to you who is a member of your flock, or maybe not even necessarily your flock, but someone who shares your values and your religion? What do you say to them when these horrible terrorist acts are taking place in Europe, here in the United States, and they say, you want us to be friends with people who share that religion? What do you tell them?
I tell them, number one, there are 1.7 billion Muslims in the world, 2.2 billion Christians, and neither are going away. Now, if that's the case, we're going to have to learn to relate. We're going to have to find people who are willing to work with us, network with us. And if we put all Muslims in one box, we've just set our world on fire. We've just created World War III. We don't have a choice. It's not something that is a luxury to do or adventuresome in the least. It's out of survival and necessity that we must build bridges with one another. That's the first thing I say. That's appealing to human self-interest. As a Christian, here's the second thing I say. Number one, Jesus tells us to love all people, even our enemies. And if we're going to do that, we're going to have to reach out to them. And the third thing that I tell them is that if we vilify people, the hate is bad for us. What it does to us internally and spiritually is horrible for us. And I also tell them, you know, as evangelicals, we want people to at least get a chance to hear about who Jesus is. If we as evangelicals trash Muslims, speak evil, can never say anything good, why in the world are they ever going to give a listen to what we believe the truth is? I mean, it's like we're going out of our way to be disrespectful. So there's much to say. At the end of the day, most evangelicals were raised believing we should love Muslims and tell them about Jesus and send missionaries. But man, we don't want them living next door to us. We don't want to see them in public. And that's just wrong. And it's not going to change. We need to go back to the values of our faith, because those values teach us how we respond to other people. And if we do, not only may there be a chance that somebody gets to hear about Jesus, but there's also even a bigger probability that we'll be able to build bridges and get along and not kill one another.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Dr. Bob Roberts. He is the founding and senior pastor of Northwood Church in Fort Worth, Texas. And we're talking about an event that happened at Calvin Seminary here in Grand Rapids recently. It was an opportunity for evangelicals to talk about, amongst themselves, the treatment of Muslims and how to counteract Islamophobia here in the United States. Bob, if you would, can you give us a couple of takeaways from the event? Last week, we spoke to John Moorhead, as I mentioned at the beginning of this program, and he talked about some of the things. Well, I'll tell you what he spoke about, so maybe you can perhaps go in a different direction. He spoke about, I think the most important thing for him, as he told me, was the idea of hospitality and not just offering hospitality, but receiving hospitality. He apparently said some people in the evangelical community are more than happy to invite a Muslim over to their house or their church for some function and to feed them, but it isn't necessarily in their comfort zone to go to a mosque or go to a Muslim family's home for dinner. Is that your experience as well?
It has been, but I would say preceding hospitality, for me, the biggest takeaway was something that I've learned, and I heard several people say it here, and why it was profound was because you're dealing with academics, scholars, the head of universities and seminaries, and here's the number one thing. We have to be in relationship and friendship with people. When we become a friend with someone and we build that relationship, for me, that's the biggest game changer. That's it. Because, and even the academics are realizing this, which excites me. Because you can say, read this book, study this, great, all right, I'm ready to go out and do it. But no book can prepare you for the warmth in a person's eyes, the respectful question, the curiosity, the longing and desires that they have for their family, for their future, how they want to live in community and in harmony in society. When you start talking to people at a gut level, that's the game changer. And here's what you're doing. You're looking at people first and foremost as human beings. And I guess you could say it another way. You're humanizing people. Because to a large extent, we see people first as, well, it's this or that, or that's their religion. You can tell by the way they dress. But who is that person? How do they think? What are their desires and dreams? What are their pains? How does it feel to be a Muslim? And how have we made it difficult for them? And these sorts of things. I just think you cannot escape the power of friendship. In America, even though it's dealt with immigration issues in the past and refugee issues in the past, we cannot forget that we have been a place of community and friendship. When we stop doing that, we cease to be Americans.
Very well said. When this took place at Calvin, were there any Muslims involved?
No, there weren't. Not that there weren't. It was all Christians.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, I agree, sometimes you have to have conversations amongst yourselves. I totally get that.
Yeah. No, it was in this situation. One of the things that that me and Imam Majid Muhammad of Washington, D.C., we're working with the Atlantic Council here in the States, and we're going to do the pastor imam retreats in 50 cities. We have a board made up of Muslims and Christians and Jews, and we're excited about it because I would like to have the same kind of conversations, and I do have, but I want to see them broadened out, that we had right here. So Muslims many times will talk about their da'wah, which is the equivalent of the Christian Great Commission. So we talk, what does it mean to talk about your faith without being disrespectful? Some of the hard questions that we don't want to talk about, we need to talk about so that we know how to relate more.
Sure. What about, I can understand how someone who has not had your experiences, but someone who is an evangelical, being suspicious of these kinds of interactions because They're afraid of tainting doctrine, something like that. So part of your religion is what you believe, and another part is what you do. And by this, I'm speaking specifically in, say, a liturgical sense or a private prayerful sense, not in terms of serving the world or anything like that. So, for instance, as a Christian, you gather on Sunday, you sing hymns, you deliver a sermon, you read the Bible at home. Muslims have different practices. So, for instance, praying five times a day, fasting during Ramadan. Have you been able to learn from and perhaps respect some of these practices and actually say to yourself, you know, they may believe the wrong things, but they do some right things? This is one of the things I found out in my interfaith work. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I really do. I think so. You know, I think our view of Muslims is irrational. Most evangelical Christians, they're not suspect of Jews or Buddhists or Hindus. It's interesting to me, and I understand we've had wars in our country, and there have been extremists of the Muslim faith that have hijacked. Most Muslims would say they've hijacked their faith, and they don't like it. So I understand that, but I think it's just crazy for us to disproportionately have concerns towards Muslims that we don't have towards people of other faiths. And it's also detrimental to our own faith. But what I would say to you with reference to that is I've learned a lot from my Muslim friends. You know, I mean, yes, I disagree with Muslims theologically. I mean, I believe Jesus is God and that he died for the sins of the world, and they would view him as a prophet. But I can still, they're human beings. We're both created in the image of God. That's a fact. That means that there's sacredness inside a Muslim, just like there's a Christian, a Jew, a Buddhist, or even an atheist, from what I believe. We're still in the image of God. We're still sacred. And we've been commanded to live at peace with one another. So I would rather have someone praying who maybe doesn't pray like I pray, but at least believes that there should be an authority for their life that determines behavior, than someone who just says, you know what, it's all about me and mine and what I want. But I would say something else, too, and I was just talking with somebody about this earlier in the day. The reality is, being with people of other faiths, people see it as destabilizing your own faith. And I would say that's true only if you really don't have faith. But if you do have a faith, it will actually strengthen your faith. I was in Saudi Arabia one time with the royal family, and they had a reporter ask me, says, Bob, being around the Muslims that you have, the leading scholars, and the royal family, what has Islam done for you and Muslims since you've been here? He said, I'll tell you what it's done for me. It's made me a far better Christian. And the guy said, what in the world do you mean by that? And I said, well, you've got to understand, there are many things I've always believed, but I believe them because somebody just told me that and I accepted them. But when I was challenged by Muslims, why do I believe in a Trinity? Why do I believe Jesus is God? I had to look deeply at those questions. And it caused me to reflect at a level in my faith I had never reflected at before. And it had a profound impact on my personal walk with Jesus. So I don't think other faiths are bad. I think they're good. The early church had other religions all around it. Look at Paul, what he does. He relates to the other religions. He doesn't trash them. Acts 19:37, the town clerk comes to his defense and he says, you know, this man hasn't trashed our religions, vilified our religions is what he says, or been a crook. You know, and so Paul, he's even complimentary when he goes to Mars Hill. You say that there's an unknown God, you do good. Let me tell you who I believe that he is. And then he takes off. For some reason, we have this mentality that wants to trash other religions to make us feel good about our own. I have a friend named Doug Coe. Here's what he said. Lift up Jesus, show love, and that's the gospel. If we just lift him up, and he's right, and that's what I want to do.
Bob, we are coming down to the end of the wire on this episode of Common Threads. Briefly, any websites you would recommend people to investigate on your work?
Yeah, we've got a website. It's called glocal.net, glocal.net. You can go there. It's about to be updated. It's about 4 years old, but it'll help you understand a little bit about what we do. You can want to hear me preach. I have people all over the world listen to my sermon that are friends that are not Christians. It's at northwoodchurch.org. You can follow me on Twitter at Bob Roberts, JR. But that'll tell you a little bit about it. My book, Bold as Love, came out in 2012. It deals with how I relate to Muslims as well.
Okay, wonderful. Well, again, Bob, we want to thank you so very much for taking time out of your day, especially last minute as it has been, and continued success with all your endeavors.
Thank you. I enjoyed being with you today. God bless you.
You too. I'm Fred Stella.
Right. Bye-bye.
I'm Fred Stella, and this is Common Threads on WGVU. Please join us again next week for another interesting conversation.